For decades, a destination for tourists and locals alike, Lexington Market has seen better days. It's still a busy place, but the customer base has declined. So have the number of vendors selling fresh produce, meat, and baked goods. In recent years, Baltimore's oldest and largest public market has become associated with drug deals and crime. But that could change in coming years as city planners prepare for a multi-million dollar market overhaul, now in its initial stages. What changes are being considered? And can planners strike a balance between attracting affluent clients while serving the market's traditional customer base? Baltimore Public Markets Chief Robert Thomas and architect Klaus Philipson on Lexington Market's past, present, and future on Midday After the News. And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Roderick's here. Thanks again for joining us for our second hour. On a recent lunch hour at Baltimore's Lexington Market, the smell of fried chicken wafts through the crowd as dozens of people huddle together in loose conversations. Some stand in line, 15 people deep, to buy lottery tickets. Others share puffs of electronic cigarettes as the faint sound of police sirens echoes overhead. Food vendors selling everything from Jewish corned beef to roasted peanuts and fudge busily manage their wares. Lexington Market is the city's oldest and largest public market, dating back to the 1780s. It's located in downtown's west side. It measures about 78,000 square feet, the size of two city blocks. Over the decades, Lexington Market has gone through various ups and downs. At the height of its popularity, it was a destination for locals and tourists alike, who came to buy everything from produce to some exotic foods and coarse crab cakes. But in recent decades, it's been on a downward slide. Not only is foot traffic down and the number of vendors down, but it's been identified as a place for drug deals and crime. That could change as the city eyes a multi-million dollar market overhaul that Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake hopes could revitalize that part of the city. Next week, a consultant is expected to release a major study that will include recommendations for planners on what could be done to Lexington Market, to the whole area over there, to improve it. To pave the way for the expected overhaul, just last month, the city bought the last parcel of the market, the last piece of the market, the Lexington Arcade, giving it full ownership of the site for the first time since the 1980s. So what's in the future for Lexington Market? What could we expect to see there in the coming years? Will the city be able to find a balance between attracting a more affluent clientele while also serving its longtime customer base? And how could the market's facelift affect West Baltimore in general? With us now in Studio A to answer some of those questions, Robert Thomas. Robert Thomas is the head of both Lexington Market Incorporated and of the Baltimore Public Markets Corporation. He's worked at Lexington Market in some capacity for nearly two decades. It's nice to get you on the show with us today to talk about this. Robert Thomas, welcome.
Thank you, Dan.
And also back with us is Midday contributor Klaus Philipson, president of the local architectural firm ArcPlan, Inc., and he's the co-chair of the American Institute of Architecture's Urban Design Committee. He also blogs at arcplanbaltimore.blogspot.com. You can find a link to Klaus's blog posting on Lexington Market and public markets in general on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page. He also writes about architecture and planning for the Baltimore Business Journal. Klaus, nice to see you back here.
Glad to be back.
And Happy New Year to you, by the way.
Thank
belated
you.
Happy New Year. So, Robert Thomas, let's start with you. I don't want to focus on problems right away. I want to focus on the future, I think. We can talk about the problems along the way when it comes to the market. What's the plan here? What do we think we're going to see from the planners, the consultants' report on Lexington Market?
The planners have focused on design principles and design elements, program elements that would enhance the market's experience and bring into the market things that are not there now, but are showing up as best practices and standard elements in many of the public markets around the country.
What's not there now, in your view? What does the market need?
Well, the market needs fascination, for one thing. The market needs menus that entice people, that are broad enough to accomplish appeal to the range of people that we have in the city, and especially in the west side of downtown. So there is a base, obviously, that uses and consumes what's there now. But we also want to expand that to include the individuals, the couples, and the families that are moving into downtown, some from out of town, and they bring with them their own tastes and their own preferences. So we want to be able to accomplish all of that and do some with a sense of theater or at least a fascination that evokes a sense that this is a cool place.
You know, I saw the phrase once thriving associated with Lexington Market, and I questioned the phrase once thriving. What's thriving? Thriving is all the vending stalls are being used, lots of foot traffic. Everybody's happy. You don't have any crime-related problems. I mean, I just listed them all. But would you say the market is not thriving? Would you use that term? Would you just say it's busy today? Or how would you characterize Lexington Market on a good day today?
I'd say it's busy and it's maintaining. It is holding steady. But holding steady has its own built-in erosion. If you do the same thing over the same period of time, the rest of the world changes and you lose ground. We don't want to lose ground. So our challenge is to continue to make the market relevant, and that gets us to thriving.
Klaus, how would you describe Lexington Market today? And then we'll talk about the plans. We have plenty of time for that. But what is your general view of that place in Baltimore these days?
Well, in part, I think that we have talked it down too much over, you know, the last decade or more. We keep on talking about it as a patient instead of an attraction. And there comes a point where you really talk it down instead of talking it up. But, you know, there are reasons, of course, why this happens, because it doesn't live up to its potential, probably. And that has to do with the fact that the world is changing and the market maybe not so much. And the world is changing in many respects. The dispersal model of our development in the second half of the last century has changed to a attraction of cities model. So we have a lot of new residents on the west side and in Baltimore that are not being attracted to the market sufficiently. We have an interest in food in a different way. When it was like in the last century, it was all about convenience and fast food and drive-through, and you know, somebody brings the pizza box to your house. And now we have an interest in local food, in slow food, in well-prepared food, in healthy food, and that is not totally reflected in the market. And then we have a change from living all in privacy and out there in the boonies in your house, and you have your home movie in the basement, and you get the pizza delivered to the door, to community and interest in community and placemaking and social interaction. And this is the perfect constellation, those three new trends, to make the market really thrive. Markets across the world have a renaissance, and so we need to just catch up with that.
One of the points you made in your blog post is that I said it was, we linked it on our Facebook page for folks to read. It's really worth your reading. Was that people who are used to going to modern supermarkets today, the big either urban supermarkets or suburban ones, such as Wegmans, Harris Teeter, have that experience that you describe of walking around and visiting different locations within the store, a bakery over here, produce over here, delicatessen over here. And it is like the old, like the Grand Hall, the Grand Public Market. So people, so designers design those things that way. People take to them that way. That is the tradition of the public market, right?
That is very much the tradition of the public market, with one notable significant point. In the public markets, if it's truly a public market in the former sense, it's a producer's market, a maker's market. And so the butcher is the guy that actually works with that food, and he knows the cuts, and he knows the kind of things that people use the food for.
Right.
And so if you're looking for something cut a certain way or a particular piece of his product, he knows it.
Now, when we talk about the plan that you're expecting to see, in terms of the design of the market, the way the market is laid out, the way it looks, do you expect to see changes there?
We do. It's really more akin to extreme commercial makeover in our sense, simply because the building as it stands is a 1950s era building. And much of it was done before anybody knew about Energy Star. And so there are things from an infrastructure standpoint that need to be addressed. Mm-hmm. Some of that will be reflected in the way the layouts happen. And also there is a piece about just the simple math. The stalls that are the merchant stalls, the tenant stalls that are established now, are on average 240, 360 square feet within the market, maybe a little more in some cases, 410. But the 21st century model for that kind of a retail stall has some back of the house area, and then that makes the average stall closer to 500, 600, 700 square feet. So if you have that, then you're going to have a different layout because you have larger stalls and fewer of larger stalls.
You know, Klaus, I want to go back to a point you made about we've spent a lot of time talking down Lexington Market, and meaning in a negative way. People point out the problems, and Robert Thomas, you're familiar with the problems.
Yes.
Loss of some vendors on the inside, and on the outside, loitering, even drug dealing and arrests, sometimes some violence, acts of violence outside Lexington Market, all gets associated with the market.
Yeah.
In my own personal experience, I've walked through past crowds of people outside the market to get in the market and had a great experience in the market. Yeah. I have mostly positive experiences personally in Lexington Market once you get inside there. I don't know how do planners address those other issues, those urban, you know, those that are associated with all cities, really?
We've heard several suggestions. There have been many made in many committee conversations. Part of the conversation goes toward the possibilities of disruption and doing things that essentially break the patterns that people have established or been allowed to establish over time. Some of it is the security by design, so that we get more eyes on the street or more presence on the street, so that the inside comes outside. Various concepts like that are starting to be discussed.
This must have been a frustration for you for many years now.
Well, it's just one more thing.
Well, it's a major. I mean, whenever we have this conversation on this show or elsewhere, that comes up frequently.
Yeah.
410-662-8780 is our phone number here. If you'd like to join our conversation about Lexington Market, have you been there recently? Do you go to Lexington Market on a regular basis? What would you like to see in Lexington Market if there is to be a new plan for it? And so let me ask you that, Klaus. What would you like to see in terms of changes in Lexington Market?
Just getting back to the point, what's going on around the market.
Okay, fine.
So the issue of the West Side as a whole is, of course, closely intertwined with what the market can do. The market alone cannot rejuvenate the West Side, and the West Side needs a good market. So this is like a symbiotic relationship. And the whole West Side has made a lot of progress. It's kind of also talked down a lot when you don't see what all happened. But it doesn't quite add up yet. So one could also say the West Side is not thriving yet. It is kind of holding steady or making progress, but it is not thriving yet. And so these two things need to be seen together. That goes way beyond just loitering in front of the market. Then we talked briefly about the architecture of the market. Of course, that's sort of a topic I like.
Mm-hmm.
Although I would say, even as an architect, that that's not the main issue. There are certainly very thriving markets out there that don't have the world's best architecture. So the market in Philadelphia, underneath the old train station and now convention center, is architecturally not very particularly interesting. It has low ceilings. It has, this whole hat on it that you can't take away. It is not a thriving market like the ones, the Paris halls where Les Halles, and or in Santiago de Chile, the Mercado Central is a super nice market where the steel glass architecture like old train halls, you know, that's just fascinating in itself. But you, Pike's Market in Seattle, even there is thriving without great architecture. So your colleague Jack Kelly said that this market looks like an old gym or has the charm of an old gym.
Yes.
That is true, but you know that's what we got. And so what can one do, and what would be nice to change? I think it would be nice if there's a pretty tall space. And you can't see it. It's all black. So you basically never notice that you are in a tall space. So if you would get a cupola on it and some clear story and some daylight from the top, and we would create a center in this market, would be something that could be done without tearing everything down. And also the circulation really is a maze. So today, even when you frequent the market often, you sometimes have to count out the stalls to find your way to the place you always go to, because you get lost in the middle. And that is not conducive. So if the market had a circulation and a center where you can orient yourself visually sort of from the roof or from the shape of the
or
space.
Or meet friends.
and you would have a real placemaking central feature. They tried that in the past by adding on the south side what is in the right of way of Lexington Street, that shed, but that's kind of making it even more awkward, because now you can walk along Lexington Street going through the shed.
And never go into the main hall.
Right, never go in the main hall. In the shed, there's hardly anything really happening. I mean, there are just a few vendors. So it is a problem architecturally, too, and I'm very interested to see what they're coming up with as suggestions.
We have to take our first break here, but we welcome phone calls, 410-662-8780. More on Lexington Market's future with our guests. That was Klaus Philipson, Baltimore architect, blogger, and urban design expert. And Robert Thomas is with us, executive director of the Baltimore Public Markets Corporation. As we head into this break, we thought it would be useful to hear from a few shoppers at Lexington Market. So on a recent lunch hour, Midday senior producer Nikki Gamer and our intern Marjorie Goodman visited the market to talk to people. Here's what some of them had to say about their favorite food vendors. And along the way, you're going to hear the voices of John Dolan, Glenda Johnson, Tawanda Love, Glenda Adams, and Maggie Hawkins.
Mexican Delight is really good. They got a fantastic burrito that's about the size of your forearm. It's huge. It tastes really good. I recommend the fish burrito. Mon Olympus makes a fantastic lamb gyro. Park's Chicken is good. Oh, geez. there's tons of good places to choose from.
I like to come and walk around and see what I happen to be in the mood for. So everywhere. I just walk the whole market and then I get something.
My favorite stall is Country Kitchen, because they got everything you possibly can eat. And I like the fish stall. Yeah, that fish stall. I love seafood. I always eat it. And the crab place. The crabs are gorgeous.
They got this thing called Dancing Potato. And their food, the potato is really good. You get your money's worth.
The hot dog stand. I love their hot dogs with the relish and the whole works. You know, they be your whole works. The fruit stall is over here to my left. But like I said, it's quite a few of them in here that, you know, you can go from one place to another. And it's just wonderful. That's why I continue to come down here. And not only that, the prices are convenient.
Some of the problems that you see facing Lexington Market at this time?
There are still some vendors in here whose foods are iffy, but there's also the seating area. If you wanted to come in here and purchase, sometimes that isn't the most palatable place to eat.
Some of the challenges are undesirables. A lot of people here come across the street from them substance abuse programs, and they're hanging out, and they just make it look bad down here.
With a lot of people coming in and standing on the corners, hanging out, they are addicted. And there's a lot of that going on. And I noticed, too, that a lot of people have to try to come certain times of the day, you know, and just hurry up and get what they're going to get and get away from here, because there's just so much going on.
When I initially started, the clientele in here was just a little different. That's changed over the years. Well, more workers that were in here. Plenty more workers. And today, I think part of the problem maybe here in the market is the center, which allows all the druggies, people who have issues that populate this place now, sort of ran out a lot of the people that used to come.
Either it's dirty or there are people hanging around that make it not a positive or a pleasant experience.
And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Roderick's here. The tape you just heard was from Lexington Market during a recent lunch hour. Midday intern Marjorie Goodman interviewing shoppers Glenda Johnson, Jeff Cook, Maggie Hawkins, and Carl Thompson about what they see as problems for Lexington Market. In the studio with us is Robert Thomas, executive director of the Baltimore Public Markets Corporation, who's been associated with Lexington Market, running things down there for a couple of decades. Nice to have you with us again, Robert. And Klaus Philipson, Baltimore architect, is with us as well. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. Can we just talk about the West Side just briefly? Because Klaus touched on it. And it's correct. There are several positive pieces of things going on. If you go up in the sky and look down on the West Side, Lexington Market and South, and to the west a little bit, lots of positive things going there. They're just not connected, right? That's the word I would use, Klaus. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's not yet adding up enough so that these things grow together. And you can send, for example, these tourists that we have clinging to the Inner Harbor up to the Lexington Market and say, look at this attraction, which is, you know, no problem in Seattle or so. But here it's a problem because there's no good route to take where you wouldn't come across a bunch of abandonment and misery that is not the most conducive to, you know, approaching right. an attraction. So right. in the West Side, we are shortly right before this point where things add together.
So Everyman Theater,
Saratoga Street,
Hippodrome. It's all,
for example, yeah. Saratoga Street is really pretty much very good from one end to the other. I mean, there is practically no vacancy, and there are all these small little stores that specialty stores and so on that I think over time could be the whole West Side could be like this. A good portion of Baltimore Street is very good.
Mm-hmm.
The lower part of Howard Street is pretty much fixed. But you still have disconnects, and that's one of the problems. And you've got a lot of new residents that you don't capture yet in the market. That's the other.
And I mentioned those bigger pieces, the Everyman Theater, the Hippodrome not far away, University of Maryland, the hospital system is all within walking distance. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. Let's take a couple of calls on Lexington Market. We welcome your comments. Joshua in Baltimore, you're on Midday. Hi.
Hi. I just am concerned that the people that use it now will be uncomfortable if it gets so upscaled. It should be improved, and they should try to expand the attraction. But what about the people who are going there now and might be pushed out if it gets too upscale because it's reasonably priced and it's not so fancy?
Right. That's a good question. One of the questions we wanted to tackle this hour, you know, how do you increase the tourism there, the number of people who come there to shop from all different parts of the city, maybe more affluent people, with those who are already there and using Lexington Market to shop for their groceries.
Well, that's the whole point of a market. I mean, traditional, historically, markets were never the cleanest and yuppiest areas in town.
That's right.
I mean, the halls in Paris, they kind of got them out of downtown because there was a lot of prostitution. And, I mean, that complaint is age old, that the market is an area where a lot of things happen. I think the trick is here to attract new people in addition, not pushing anybody out, but in addition to those that are there, because obviously it serves as a food source for a food desert that we have to the west.
You know, Robert Thomas, you used the word fascination. One of the things that people need, that the market needs, is fascination, for people to be fascinated with it, but also needs authenticity.
It does.
Because I think if a visitor comes from out of town, they want to go to maybe not Harbor Place, right. Want to go someplace authentic, you know, authentic crab cake or muskrat in season or
yes.
something.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
This is the place where real people shop in Baltimore.
That's exactly right. And that's what we are dealing with. And that's, we have to cover the range, as I mentioned to someone else, of palates and wallets and tastes in the market. So we've got to cover the whole range. We're not really focused on just one. And the mayor does have a mandate, some directional and instructional mandate to us, to not displace the core demographic. Because there are people who still, there's still grandmothers who come to make market on the weekends, and they take home bags and bags of groceries. So we're not looking to displace them. We're not looking to outprice them. But we are looking to broaden what we offer.
Let's talk to Susan, who's calling from Canton. Susan, welcome to the show.
Hello. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller. My husband and I have moved to Baltimore about 6 months ago, and we were very excited to learn about the market. We're new to the East Coast in general. I had visited Philadelphia and gone to their market. You had mentioned that earlier, and love the idea of this working market, people in the community in the area using the market on a day in, day out basis. And we were very excited to go down and visit Lexington Market. Had actually watched an episode on Charm TV as well, and so we did go down there, spent a Saturday, and we're a bit disappointed in the lack of cleanliness and just the population that does linger, as you were discussing earlier. But I think there's just so much potential for Baltimore and that market space to become something great. And at this point, if we have a company that comes and visits, it will not be a place that I bring them until it does get cleaned up a little bit. But I would be really hopeful that will be a destination that we will bring visitors if we do come.
Thank you very much, Susan. Appreciate hearing that. And, you know, Klaus, as I said, and as I said to Robert, this comes up every time we talk about Lexington Market. When it comes to design, though, if you know, approaching this project of a facelift, an overhaul for this old market to really bring it to its potential, how does a planner or a designer deal with that kind of – we're really talking about social problems on the doorstep of the market.
Well, it goes from circulation to the presentation of the goods. So when you compare a supermarket of the 60s and 70s when everybody started to move out and the supermarket became the competitor to the traditional urban market, compare a 60s supermarket with today, and you have a huge change in how the product is presented, including the funny one that we mentioned earlier, that they take the market concept with the various product groups and so on and make it more like a market.
Right.
But then when you go to lighting and how this stuff is displayed and so on, it is just super nice. And in the market, nothing has changed. The lighting is just the glaring white lighting from some fluorescent fixtures over top, and the displays are, you know, styrofoam boxes and what have you. So this could be all... you know, each of the stalls could have design standards, which was, there were so many studies about this market. The public Project for Public Spaces did a study in 2012. ULI was in town. I hope that with this study, this is the last study we do, and we actually really do the changes. But there are lots of these things that are just the display and how the product and the circulation and how you approach it.
I'm with you. I can see you're describing a market that sounds very enticing and appealing once you get inside. But Susan's describing this problem that Robert has heard for years now.
Well, the other
thing
is
getting inside and not feeling uncomfortable on your way there.
The barrier between inside and outside, if I had to design it, I would open it radically up. So they did that, for example, on Eastern Market in Washington, D.C., where they renovated the market hall itself. But then they have open roofs on the side of it. And then at certain market days, then you have sort of a farmer's market outside.
Hmm.
And we have this huge parking lot next to it. And we have all the surrounding uses need to be considered alongside with the market. I know this is very difficult because there's no control over that. But there needs to be a plan on how what's surrounding the market is complementing the market. That's what Pike's Market does in Seattle so well.
Do you have an idea about that, Robert? Thoughts on that?
In fact, my mind went to Pike's Market as Klaus was talking, because they do have the same kinds of tents outside, and the inside-outside dynamic is going to be helpful for us, because then we start to engage the street, we engage the public, and the PPS study actually kind of pointed that out, especially with the fact that there's this piece that sort of interrupts Lexington Street. And so therefore, rather than be a disruption to the flow, we should engage it.
Let's take another call. Maureen in Baltimore, you're on Midday to talk about Lexington Market, public markets.
Yeah, hi. Hi, Klaus. It's Maureen Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, hey, how are you?
I'm good. So a lot of things have been said already that I would just second. I grew up in and around Philadelphia. And the renovation of the Reading Terminal Market, you know, I always loved it when I was a little kid, and it was kind of, you know, old and crummy, and now it's wonderfully new and kind of still feels like the Reading Terminal Market. The fact that it's a center city market, you know, it's really in the middle of things, seems like, you know, a good template, sort of. I mean, we're not Seattle, you know. I love Pike Market, but we're not Seattle. and Washington and Philly seem like better templates. But, you know, I just want to second that I have guests coming from out of town who I will take to the Lexington Market, but I have plenty of guests who I would never take there. I have to really pre-screen because some people are not going to be able to tolerate it. And I love the fact that it is a slice of life going to the Lexington, but, you know, there's just a lot of folks who just would never want to go there.
All right. Thank you for the call. Valerie writing on Facebook, I love this market and would always enjoy taking my elderly Russian Jewish English as a second language students from the Baltimore County Community College there. It was a wonderful place to practice their haggling skills in English and to get a taste of the old and new country. John, a different view, he says it's wasted money until the city proves it's safe to shop at the market. There was a stabbing there just last night. It's known as Baltimore's place to buy drugs, not food. I have serious doubts that current city leadership has the ability to handle such an endeavor. You want to comment on that, Robert?
Can't comment on the city leadership piece, but I can say the incident on Monday night was more of an aberration than anything else. And in fact, my experience and your experience are roughly the same. Inside the market is fine. And even on the periphery of the market, it's the same. And I'm a city dweller. The issues are, as Klaus pointed out, a little bit beyond the market. In fact, the context in which we find ourselves is one that needs to be managed to complement what we do on the inside to engage people and make people comfortable. There are architectural ways to do that, and there are other ways to set the atmosphere, and we need to enforce those things and develop those things. We are doing so incrementally in terms of cleaning. We've done high and low dusting and high and low cleaning more aggressively, actually, since August the 2nd when I actually took this chair, in ways that perhaps we're not up to degrees and to an extent that we're not done before. So, you know, there are lots to do, and we're doing it.
I want to play another clip for our listeners, a recent interview with Larry Brenner, owner of Constant Foods, one of the oldest vendors at Lexington Market. Larry Brenner has been running that business for about, he's been running the business for about 7 years, but the business is older than that. He spoke with Midday intern Marjorie Goodman at the market last week. Here are his thoughts on this overhaul that we're talking about.
This market needs a lot less than people think it needs. It needs some quality, some better quality vendors. It needs a little more variety in the food offering, and it needs some TLC and some lipstick on the pig. It doesn't need anything near $25 million, in my humble opinion. I'd like to see them bring in a better variety of food and market the market to a higher end clientele, meaning, you know, we've got low income and we've got some middle income here. We need to have a little bit of everybody, and they can do it. It can happen. I have faith.
He has faith. Klaus, what do you think of Larry's comments?
Well, I tend to agree that, you know, I don't know what the right number is to spend there, but that we should not, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater. So when I hear that the floor needs to be level between Parker Street and Utah Street, I start shivering. I think this is sort of a huge expense and probably not the biggest problem.
Yeah, I don't see that as the problem.
He's right. So I went through there and counted out, you know, what's there and how many stalls. So there are 113 stalls that I counted in the East and the West Market, and 14 of these are non-food things. So, you know, they don't help to do authenticity. And so when somebody sells cell phones in there, so that just shouldn't happen. And then 15 are currently vacant. I guess that's in preparation for having some flexibility for the renovation. 55% or 63 of all the stalls are fast food. They do exclusively fast food. So that's too much. There should be more fresh. You know, there are five that sell exclusively produce, and there are seven bakeries, but the bakeries don't have any bread that, you know, that one could call bread. It's just all the same kind of bakery.
You mean bread you see in a supermarket, or what do you
mean? It's a mushy factory bread instead of you know some kind of. I was in the Reading Market, and and I bought a bread, and he started explaining to me that this is crusty. And so I said, well, you know, I'll put it in the bread box. And he said, oh, well, once you have a bread box, I don't need to explain it to you. So, that, you know, that was a baker who had the pride in his, he wanted to explain how it works.
Right.
That wouldn't happen at these bakeries. They all sell these frosted cakes, and, you know, that's fine. And they have some.
You're saying there needs to be better management, more diversity in the presentation of what's offered there for people.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would agree.
While at the same time offering, I think you got to offer the bread that people can find in a supermarket because there's no other supermarket around, right?
Well,
that may be the bread that some people want.
That supermarket,
and their budget can afford, right?
That supermarket that's in there is a big problem. I mean,
There is a supermarket in the market.
That's on along Packer Street, and that's sort of a barrier. That's my biggest grief about all of this. You have a circulation that goes from Utah to Packer, from Packer to Utah, and then you have this big barrier in there that is that supermarket that has god awful stuff. You know, that should go.
Robert, what do you want to share some thoughts about that? We have to take a break here, but in the supermarket and also the West Market. Do we need the West Market?
Well, actually, if you include the entire premises, you think about the fact that there's more than one way to skin this cat, and maybe the focus should be on the 78,000 square foot East Market, and maybe not. Maybe, in fact, we need to look at the other building as a way to actually get done what we need to get done. It's about 31,000 square feet, or a little more than that.
You mean it could be a smaller market?
It could be a smaller market. Could be more manageable, more handled better.
I was thinking the other way, that maybe the smaller market isn't needed.
Well that's entirely possible. I'm just saying that there are lots of options.
It could be a standalone supermarket, too. Baltimore still needs supermarkets.
The funny thing is the West Market has the larger stalls and has less slope in the floor, so it's and it has one central aisle and left and right, and it's pretty easy to navigate.
That's true.
There are not very many people in it, so that's currently, it seems like it's an appendix. But, you know, it has some advantages, too.
It does indeed.
We'll take another break here and come back and take some more phone calls about Lexington Market. Please join us. 410-662-8780 is our number here. As we head into this break, we hear from some more shoppers, on a recent lunch hour. Nikki Gamer, our producer, was down there with intern Marjorie Goodman. Here's what some of the folks at the market had to say about how they describe the market to people who've never been there before.
It's a smorgasbord of everything you could want. I mean, some things that you haven't seen before. For instance, there's some raccoon over there. I'm not eating no raccoon, but it's here. Muskrat is here, but I'm not eating no muskrat either.
If you've never been here, I'd describe it's a great place to come for the food.
It's kind of old school. It looks like it's been here a while. It's bustling with activity pretty much any day. If you come here on Fridays, they usually have live music, nice and loud, and tons of people milling around. It's a good people watching place. Plenty of places to sit. Not too crowded. Nobody's pushing or shoving or anything. But I don't know. It's just kind of fun. It's like a lot to look at. Lots of signs. Lots of everything.
What I would change, too many of the chicken places, you know, get a little bit more variety of stuff, you know, something other than chicken.
Get rid of the crime. Get rid of the people that be standing around, hanging around and stuff. Just get rid of that. It'd be right back to Lexington Market. It's Lexington Market now, but it'd be better.
It definitely needs kind of a facelift. It looks a little old inside. I kind of like the aspect of where it's got that old, like almost a Seattle Fish Market look to it. Everybody knows the world famous one out there. But, you know, it could use some... a little splash of something here and there. I know I drive in every morning right up Russell Street, and I always see the lights are out on the sign, and, you know, say like Ington Market and things like that. So, you know, attention to some other finer details I think would be pretty good.
As far as changes, they really need more police officers here. They need to get away the crowds that are here constantly, hanging on the corners. A lot of them want to be inside, get rid of the peddlers. Those are the changes really that they need so people can, you know, come here and relax and be comfortable and enjoy this area, enjoy the market.
The voices of some of the shoppers at Lexington Market recently, as we talk about Lexington Market this hour with Klaus Philipson, Baltimore architect, and Robert Thomas, executive director of the Baltimore Public Markets Corporation. We expect to see a report next week. I guess, about what to do with Lexington Market in the future, what kind of improvements to make. Barbara in Baltimore, we'll take your call next. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Dan. How's everybody?
Good.
I am saying, what I'd like to say is that I have always loved the Lexington Market. I've lived in Baltimore City for more than 40 years now, and I worked at the University of Maryland downtown for 38 years. And I went to the Lexington Market every day. My husband would meet me on Fridays with our daughter. We would buy our stuff. We'd come back with folks from the neighborhood on Saturday. So the Lexington Market, I remember all the old places that were there. And over the years, I watched it deteriorate, but I watched the whole of downtown deteriorate. But one of the things that always struck me working at university was that very few of the people that work at university come over to the market, even before they had the franchises within the hospital. And I've always thought that somehow the city could develop some kind of office, for example, at the University of Maryland to encourage people to use the city downtown, because it is so much of a state and suburban institution, it's almost as if it's not in the city of Baltimore. From my perspective, living in Baltimore City, I used to take the number 11 bus and then the number 8 bus, but so many people, all the university people that come there, come in their cars. They mm-hmm. park and they go home. And I think we need some kind of educational campaign to move them into the city and take advantage of them and hope that they have a good time and enjoy Baltimore.
Especially during lunch hour, right, Barbara? I mean, they are there during the day, during
there's
lunch hour.
There's not that
hour.
Many.
There's not that many what?
There was a gang of us that used to go over, but there were very few people
Excuse
that
me.
Went to the Lexington Market.
Okay, I understand that. But there's many people who work in the university system just a few blocks away from Lexington Market. So, Robert Thomas, you want to address that about marketing the market to people who work nearby?
We are, in fact, aggressively pursuing ways to do that and attract some piece of this 26,000 or so daytime population at the University of Maryland, but anybody else as well. I mean, we want to just get our story out there. We figure out what our story is and tell it to anybody who's within earshot so that they can come to the market and experience it.
Do you have any measure of that today? Like the people who come to the market, do you know where they come from?
We know it anecdotally. Yeah. We are... developing more formal measures to figure that out. But we had an amazing response to the online surveys and the intercept surveys that were done by the consulting team. And people were actually from all over the place. We did see more, we thought, people coming from the University of Maryland, but it has to be an attractive walk. It's kind of like, it's not exactly like you can't get there from here, but do you want to get there from here? And we're the there. And University of Maryland is the here, so we have to make it attractive to them to come.
That was, in fact, one of the key recommendations of the Urban Land Institute in their report about the West Side, that the university and the president of the university and the mayor should collaborate, and that is happening, in my understanding, to both join their security forces to create more safety in the street, but also to market their mutual attractions. And there was, I think, a survey done at the University of Maryland. I think Jane Sharp mentioned this once, that more people actually go than you know, the impression is. But that certainly could be improved. And making the exterior more attractive, I think, has a lot to do with it. Toronto has a market where you can take your food outside on a terrace and eat it there instead of just on these mezzanines. You know, all these things would make it less of a barrier to go in there.
Tommy in Baltimore actually, I think, wants to make this point. Tommy, thanks for calling Midday.
All right, thank you for taking my call. I like that guy, Klaus Phillips. He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, okay.
What we need to do is take the existing example there that has the history attached to it and multiply it and bring in a diversity of people. I've been going down to that market since I was about 3 or 4 years. I still go there. And I'm in my 80s now. I love going to that market. The problem is, what needs to be examined more forensically, it will never get discussed on your program, because they'll run you off that program if you talk about it. It's a control dynamic that's interested in controlling that. But if you do some of the things that last lady mentioned and a few other people mentioned, you will have a generator in here that does everything that everybody wants to do. Nobody really wants to talk about it or really get into the basic principles that make it happen.
What is it? Excuse me, Tommy, I'm not sure. I want to pursue this a little bit, but what are we not talking about?
Well, the politics is controlled by commercialism and the infestation over the years of money that can make it happen and can wait out time.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's go to Bob in Baltimore then for his comments about Lexington Market. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you, gentlemen. I happened to be there for lunch yesterday, so a few things struck me when I was there, even before your good program came on. And just very briefly, the flooring is dismal, but the first thing that strikes you when you walk in, and some light-colored ceramic or something of that nature would help a lot. And on the other side of the coin, the lighting was very poor, especially in the Thales area where I ate lunch. And I was amazed that something had changed there. I'm not sure what. And lastly, I went to another stand where I was going to eat, but a sandwich was $13, which is a tongue sandwich, which I happen to like, and I was amazed at how their prices went up. However, I must be honest and say that's not characteristic of the Lexington Market. It's usually fair priced, but the sandwich I wanted was very expensive. So I appreciate that there's interest in the market. I have gone there for over 40 years, but not as much recently because of some of the things that are being said on your show. So thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Thank you very much. And Susan wanted to share a memory about Lexington Market with us. I guess we can do that. We didn't talk about the past all that much. Hi, Susan.
The reason I think it's important is because it shows that this place is an institution and you really have to save it. I don't know what it takes, but when my mother lived here her whole life, and when she was about 45, she took my brother to Lexington Market to the candy stall, and he'd pick something out. And the woman behind the counter, whose stall it was, while she was bagging the candy for him, said to my mother, "You used to like the chewy kind." And, I mean, she remembered her from, like, 30 years
before. That's kind of amazing.
Yeah. And so stories like that, I don't know what the answer is, but I just think it has to be saved.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I think we all agree on that.
Yeah. I just wanted to also add that, you know, since the markets are such a matter of urban interest right now, there's going to be a market conference this year in Barcelona organized by the Project for Public Spaces. And Baltimore is one of the very few cities in America that has a whole network of, and Robert can speak about that because he chairs all of them, I think six, public markets. And they're all in need of tender, loving care. Some are doing better than some others. Some have already gotten care. But I think we need to look at Lexington Market as sort of the mother of all these.
The mothership.
All these markets, and that this network of public markets is an important element that makes Baltimore, Baltimore.
Holland's Market.
Yes.
Cross Street Market. Northeast Market.
Right. Avenue, Broadway, and.
Right. The Broadway markets. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Yep. All right. Thank you very much for being with us, Robert. So the report will be out next week.
Yes.
We can all read about it, and then. Hopefully, we will follow up on this.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Thank you very much for being here today, Robert Thomas, who is not only in charge of Lexington Market in that whole system that Klaus is talking about. And on a future show, we ought to talk about the whole system.
Sounds good.
Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
And Klaus, as always, thank you very much for your input. Again, folks, if you want to read Klaus Phillipson, you can find him in the Baltimore Business Journal, but also he writes his blog. And you can get a link to it on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page and read what he had to say about public markets in general and Lexington Market specifically. We'll follow up next week when this report comes out. Thanks for tuning in today. A special thanks to Nikki Gamer, our senior producer, and Marjorie Goodman for their work on this program about Lexington Market. This is Dan Roderick's for our staff here at Midday. Hoping you have a great afternoon. We'll be back again tomorrow. The police commissioner of Baltimore City will be our lead guest in the noon hour tomorrow. Anthony Batts, I almost said Robert Batts. Anthony Batts, Police Commissioner Batts, will be with us in the noon hour tomorrow. We'll see you then.
Midday Senior Producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer is Maureen Harvey. The Associate Producer is Michael Hemowitz. Our interns are Carrie DeSantis, David Richman, and Marjorie Goodman. Midday's engineers are Matt Taka and Luke Spicknell. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcast and live streaming is available at wypr.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.